My name is Teddy, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Valley Speaker Series Step Workshop. The Valley Speaker Series Step Workshop is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. In most open AA meetings, only alcoholics are invited to participate. However, in this workshop, we want to include all who are here to participate and contribute with questions and discussion as may be appropriate. We value your interest and contributions and hope you will find the information shared here to be helpful to your recovery and understanding of the alcoholics in your life. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Okay, so here's some housekeeping announcements. You will find restrooms at the back of this hall near the stairs, so it's straight back, going back that way. Coffee and water are available at the counter in the back. That's straight back there. Please join me in 1 minute of silent meditation. So we passed the H and I. So it says donations made to the pink cans. Do we have a pink can here?
Yep.
All right. So donations to the pink can will be used to buy literature that is taken into hospitals and institutions to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to those who are not free to attend our meetings. Again, we will be passing the can at the beginning of each session. We want to again emphasize that there is no requirement to make a financial contribution. Now, it is my privilege to introduce our workshop leader. Please help me offer a warm Tulare County welcome to our workshop leader, Chuck G. from Burbank.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Chuck. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank Bill H. for inviting me to come in and share today. He thought so well of me that he did not arrive. So. No, with all due respect. Pleasure to be here. Good to be back in the area. I used to drink in this building right back here. We were talking about that. It used to be called Shag Nasties.
Yeah.
And it was a, for all intents and purposes, please forgive my vulgarity, but it was a meat market is what it was. It's just where you went to pick people up or pick a fight, whatever your thing was that night. I've been asked to come here and share a little bit on the steps. It's difficult. I'm not a speaker. I'm not a teacher. I'm not an educator. I have no qualifications at all. I'm not schooled in any of this. I'm a drunk. I'm a drunk from Tulare. I'm a fallen down drunk. I'm a don't feed your kids drunk. I'm a send your girlfriend in the other room to do what she's got to do so you can get what you can get drunk. I'm the drunk that can't maintain a position. I blow everything in my life. I burn my life to the ground over and over and over and over again. Just blessed that on June the 14th of 1993, something happened to me and my life started to change. And it wasn't the first time I was around AA. So the qualifications are there are none. I'm just here to share experiences with the literature. I don't know how far we're going to get, because when I look at the book, we've got really about 61 pages that Wilson spends on steps 1 and 2. 61 pages, not counting the prefaces, doctor's opinion, and those things which touch on it. So there's a lot of maybe 90 pages or so of the 164. So we would spend a great deal of time on the problem, which we'll try to do, and get it as a solution. Just a quick thing, if you'll oblige me. I'd like to do just a quick moment of silence and do an opening prayer, as I've been taught to do with these, because maybe something will help us if we do that. Just a moment of silence. Lord, help me to set aside everything I think I know about you, everything I think I know about me, everything I think I know about others, and everything I think I know about my own recovery. For a new experience in you, Lord. For a new experience in myself. For a new experience in my brothers and sisters. And for a much, much needed new experience in my own recovery. Amen. Thank you. Thank you. Is anybody here in their first year of recovery? First year? Anybody in their first 30 days of recovery? Awesome. We're welcome. I'm glad you're here. I'm delighted you're here today. And you must have a real, you have a strict sponsor. I was going to use, and I'm glad you do, because I have learned that oftentimes when I'm pushed or lightly nudged to attend events that I don't want to go to, it's always been to my benefit. I've always picked up something there, met some people. It's always got me out of my head for a while, and I hope that's the experience that you have today here with us. I love the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love our steps. And the reason that I'm so fond of them and I like to talk about them so much and try to practice them. Please try to practice them, because none of us are good at that. I mean, I'm not too good at it. I try really hard. But the reason I have such an affection for them is my sobriety date was June the 14th, 93. And what happened to me was, I went to AA at 15 and a half. There was a Taco Bell on Tulare Avenue, and there used to be a youth hut behind there. And I was sentenced to the courts there back in the late 70s, and I went to AA. I was 15 and a half. And I obviously didn't belong there. I was a kid. And then I went to AA at 22. I went to a treatment center in Clovis called The Ark. I don't know if that's still in business. Anybody familiar with The Ark? Alcohol Recovery Center is what it was called. I used to work for Budweiser. They sent me there because of my drinking. Isn't that weird? And then I started popping into alcohol. I remember Gary and I lived in Brentwood, and I remember one night I was sitting there going, I need to go to AA. And he said, you're not a drunk. Ironically, we lived in this building, and directly behind us was a church. And I would be running home with my liquor and stuff, because I'm rushing home to get started. You know that feeling when it's... I don't know about you, but I'm the kind of alcoholic that I need a drink so bad that when I know the drink's coming, I already feel relief. But I'm rushing into the house, and these people are in the alley, and they're smoking, and they're like, get out of my way. I didn't know it was a meeting right behind my house. But anyway, I'm going to AA for off and on, and then in 1991, I was arrested one more time. I'd been in and out of treatment centers and detoxes, and I ended up in court. And what happened for me is, as a result of the arrest and everything, I ended up in a mental hospital on a 5150. Anybody ever been a 5150? I knew there was a couple of you here. My people are here. And so I'm in there, and the third night I was there, a guy came in from hospitals and institutions. I'm a product of H&I. For anybody do an H&I work here? God bless you. Thank you so much. You saved my life. You saved my life. The night that you didn't want to go, that you were tired, that... You know, it was a long day. You had your kids. Your favorite TV show was on. And you said, I got to go talk to those people that don't want to hear. I heard you. I heard you talk about the message, and I'd never heard it like that before. And I wanted to go to AA. And I left that mental hospital and started going to Alcoholics Anonymous like my life depended on it. I did know that it did. I had no clue. And I went to meetings, and I didn't drink, and I didn't read our literature, and I did not get a sponsor, and I did not take any service commitments. And if you're new here tonight, or you've been here for a while going to meetings, and you have no steps, no sponsor, no service, you probably have no chance, because that's my experience. I picked up a drink 6 months and 7 days dry and didn't know why I did it and couldn't put that drink down for another year and a half, and I was still coming to your meetings. And I'm the classic, I don't like the word chronic relapser, because chronic relapser would entail that I actually did something to recover, stopped doing it, and then drank again. What I was a keep coming backer. I was somebody who just carried on drinking. I went to meetings, but I really can't count the time in between meetings that I didn't drink and then drank again, because I had no recovery. I think a relapse, a chronic relapser, is a whole different ballgame. Because if you would have grabbed me and said to me, my girlfriend did this, she said, doesn't AA work? And I said, not for people like me. It works for those guys, but not for me. If I would have told her the truth, I would have said, honey, I don't know if it works, because I've never done it. I go to those meetings and I warm the chair at my butt, but I've never done what the people in AA are doing. And on June the 14th of 93, I begged a God that I didn't believe in for help, and I found myself on the phone with this little Jewish guy who was an old Navy corpsman, and he got me started in AA. I became willing to do whatever he asked me to do, which was a first for me. I don't listen to men. I don't take direction well. I'm very obstinate. If I want to go right, you said go left, I'll go opposite just to spite you. If I walk by wet paint, I can't help but go, just touch it, And anyway, what happened for me is I stopped drinking. Art Miller was his name. Art got me busy. He taught me how to go to meetings. He taught me to show up early, help out, talk to people, listen to the speakers, stay late, clean up. And he said, make phone calls. He got me busy, got me active in H&I. I was going to mental hospitals and stuff when I had a couple weeks sober, which they have rules in Los Angeles. You have to have a certain amount of time. They broke the rules and took me because they knew I was dying. And they got me really active, and I got really busy. And we started reading this little book right here. Here's the thing. If you're an alcoholic like me, you come into a meeting, you're getting sober, and they say, we got to read the books. You got to read the literature, you got to see the literature. Which one are you going to read if you're like me? Of course you are. You're going to read this one, which is a wonderful piece of literature. Bill wrote this 14 years after he wrote this book, and he says in here that it's to further enhance on the experiences, but it is not an instruction manual for taking these steps. And I was not told that, and I got sober coming out of early 90s, but coming out of the late 80s in Los Angeles, you had a ton of participation meetings. You had a lot of 12 and 12 step meetings. You had a lot of things going on. I mean, we had weird stuff. There were people bringing teddy bears to meetings. I mean, it was weird. I mean, it's all you call it AA because of traditions. You can call it what you want. But the thing is what I did was I was told, and Art was a kind man. Art had been taken through this book, and so he took me through this book. And what we would do is we would read a paragraph, we would read a step, and then write about it, and then we would read that out and go to the next one, the next one, the next one. And then we got to the fourth, and he handed me a guidebook from some outfit out of Minnesota that was just, I'm sure it was, it gave me some relief. It gave me some relief. But if you're sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with relief, it'll last so long. And what I need is freedom. And freedom and relief are two different things. Relief is like being at large. They got a warrant for you, and they're coming. And freedom is the judge lets you off probation. That's a whole different ballgame. But I got some relief, and I'm really grateful for what that man did, because he saved my life, and I got in the trenches and got busy. But here's where it comes in. Not having done a thorough moral inventory out of our book, not having faced the problem as it really is, not really understanding why I need to make amends, not really understanding the need for this power, I became very, very sick in sobriety. And I found myself at 5.5 years no longer asking God what I can do for the man who is still sick. Life started getting heavy again. Life started being no fun anymore. And Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't really fun to go to anymore. And I'll tell you why. Because if I don't practice these principles and I haven't done the work as it's outlined or as it's really prescribed, I start to get sick and I don't even know it. I start acting out and behaving in ways that I'm ashamed of. And when I am doing that, when I am doing things that are immoral that I won't talk to people about, it becomes very difficult to sit in a room and hear you talk about stuff honestly. I have to judge you because you must be as big a liar as I am and a con and a neck talker. And I stop getting where I can't even get any relief in AA. I'm going to meetings, but I'm not drinking, but I'm completely insane. And I'm not asking God for how I can help the new man. I'm asking him for the courage to at least be man enough to take out the 9mm and call it a day. Because Alcoholics Anonymous isn't working anymore, and I know I can't drink. I just want the pain to stop. And I met a man in late 90s who I heard talk about this process, and I ended up working in the city he was from, and I went looking for him, and I started following him around, and he was a big book guy. I was terrified of these people. They were intimidating. There were guys there that were sober 2 years that would start talking about things I knew nothing about, and I was 6 years sober. Wondering, where have I been? I didn't get the memo here, you know what I mean? What happened? And they started talking about what the book describes. And the book describes alcoholism as it really is. See, one of the problems that I suffer from, or that I see happen a lot, is if I come into a meeting and everyone says, I'm Mike, I'm this, I'm Mike, I'm that, I get the deal. When you come to me, I have to say that I am too. So I say, I'm an alcoholic. I have no idea what I'm copping to. If you were to say, I'm a St. Bernard, I would say I'm a St. Bernard. You know, I'm going along with it, but I don't really get what it is that I'm copping to. I don't get the fatalness, the futility and fatality of what I'm walking around with. I don't get that every day I'm waking up looking down the barrel of a gun, whether I know it or not. And if I take the actions, I put the gun back in the high boy and put it away. And if I don't, I start loading rounds and getting ready to go here. I don't know that's what's happening. And I think in the book, he does a really good job of describing alcoholism as it is. I like the doctor's opinion a lot. There's a few things he says early on in the literature. One of the things I like about this book is if you open up the first page of the book, the first page right here, he gives me the first promise. Now, you're going to hear the word promises mentioned a lot. We'll bring them up today. I like the word results. It's cause and effect is what it really is. If you turn the light switch on, we know what's going to happen. If you paid the power bill. If you turn it off, we know it's going to happen. So I take an action, I get a result. And the first promise that Wilson lays on me is this. The story how many thousands of men and women recovered from alcoholism. Wow. 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 Right away. Right away. And I have to get, what I had to get was this book isn't designed to transmit information. It's designed to transmit an experience that will help me recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. If I will take the instructions with someone who's done it before, I will get the result they've gotten. I love the Joe and Charlie. Have you guys ever listened to Joe and Charlie? You've heard the cake analogy. I love the cake analogy. You know, I do the recipe as you tell me. I'll come out with a cake. If I don't, I don't know what I'll have. I may have flapjacks or something. I don't know. But the book is I think I like to go straight to the problem, and I like the problem. It's on page XXVIII in the doctor's opinion, Roman numeral 28. If you're not if you're educated, if you're like me, it's XXVIII. Everybody got a book? Let's see. Would somebody like to read Men and Women, bottom of the page?
Yeah, men and women drink essentially because they like the effects produced by alcohol. Sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery.
Let's stop there. Anybody want to comment on that at all? Anybody? Anybody relate to that?
Absolutely. Amen. Yeah. Yeah, it just seems like it went on and on and on for years and years, and I wanted to quit, and I couldn't, and I'd find myself stopping at the store even when I told myself I didn't want to stop at the store. And then, for any reason that I might need to go to the store, it would be enough reason to go drink again.
Yeah. There's the pit of the problem right there. I'm restless, irritable, and discontented. Wow. I don't know about you, but this is what happens for me. If I've been on a run and things have been pretty bad and something occurs in my life and I go, I got to stop this crap, and I show up at a few meetings and I don't drink for a couple days, here's what happens for me. I start to feel pretty good because I'm eating again. I'm going to work. I'm not drinking. Everything's going. I start to tell I actually really feel good about stuff. It's going all right. And I don't know whether it's days, weeks, or hours, and it starts to occur. And all of a sudden, I ain't right. All of a sudden, things are bothering me. I don't know what's wrong. There's some sort of a thing in my gut just ratcheting up. Clancy talks about the spring in the gut, just tightening and tightening and tightening. And I become restless. I don't know where I fit. I can't find my spot. I don't know what's going on. Something's not right. I'm irritable. I'm easily agitated. Anybody relate?
Oh, yeah.
You guys don't have it hard. You got to drive in traffic in L.A. You'll get irritated every day. It's just. But I'm an alcoholic, so I'll be at the grocery store and in that express line, and I'm counting people's stuff, you know. Irritable and discontent. Discontent. I don't know about you, but anything I've ever got in my life, earned, acquired, been given, anything I've wanted that I thought was going to make me okay, the shine of it wears off quickly. And I'm back where I was. What's next? What's next? I remember a few years ago, I wanted this pickup truck really bad. And I finally went and got the credit, you know, all that stuff. I went and bought this truck. And I was happy. It was everything I wanted. I pulled to a stoplight, and a guy pulled up to me in a nicer one that was in red. And this is junk. Restless, irritable, and discontent. Until later on, we're going to talk about the bedevilments on page 52, I believe it is. Let's look at that real quickly. Let's look at the other part of this that occurs with people like me. I like this part because I don't know this is going on when I'm drinking, but I really start to see it when I've been around here a while and I haven't taken a drink. See if you rate for this. On page 52, middle of the page, it says we had to ask ourselves. You guys all there? Who wants to read? We were having trouble with. Gary, you want to read that?
Yeah. We were having trouble with, number one, personal relationships. Two, we couldn't control our emotional nature. Three, we were afraid of misery and depression. Four, we couldn't make a living. Five, we had a feeling of uselessness. Six, we were full of fear. Seven, we were unhappy. Eight, we couldn't seem to be a real help to other people.
We'll stop there. Anybody relate?
Absolutely.
Not getting along with people? Can't control my emotional natures. I'm either real excited or I'm suicidal in about the same 2 minutes. Can't make a living. Can't find a job or I spend everything I got. Can't keep the bills away. I'm in debt. Feeling of uselessness. What's the point? Unhappy. Full of fear. It's never going to be any good. It's never any good. If you say to me, but you were a couple weeks ago, you seemed like you were doing all right. I was probably in denial. I just get it. You know, whenever you're feeling bad, it just feels like you've always felt bad. It's just this depression kicks in. My old sponsor used to say, spiritual depression is God not doing my will. God not doing my will. So let's go back over to the doctor's opinion again. And he says here that when I get into the state, when I have all this going on and my gut's tightening up and the bills are coming in and my emotions are on me, and I'm getting angrier and angrier at what people are doing, and I'm just uncomfortable. It says at that point, I'm that way until I can again experience the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. There it is. There it is. You put a bottle of Cuervo in front of me and let me hit a couple shots of that, and all of a sudden it looks different. It's like all of a sudden the pressure comes off and I can take a breath. And I don't know, I've heard people talk about how they get taller and better looking and all that. I tell you what happens to me when I take a drink, because the sensation is so elusive. I can't put my finger on exactly what it's doing. But I like the thing when I like when I get to that point where right inside of here I feel like, who cares? I don't even care. I love that. If you have a head like mine that's constantly on you, that's running scenarios and working me, and I'm never happy, and what's wrong, and this they're doing. It just, it's always going, and it shuts off for a couple minutes and lets me just relax. Man, I will do anything for that. I will do anything. And it says here, after that comes, I see others taking these drinks with impunity. I live in a world where people drink alcohol, they do it responsibly. They drink and they do stuff like leave a half a glass, which just really pisses me off. You ever count their drinks? Are you going to drink that? Hurry up and drink it. Do we think that when you're watching somebody? But they have a different reaction. My sister, when she was straight out of high school, she had a DUI. She was at Crazy Delbert's. Remember that place?
Oh, yeah.
She was at Crazy Delbert's with some friends, and she had a few drinks. And she was driving home, and CHP lit her up on Mooney. And she got arrested. And I asked her, what was it like? Because she never drank or anything. I said, what'd you like? What's it like? She goes, it was terrible. I put handcuffs on me. I don't know. What was it like being drunk? She goes, oh, I didn't like it. I go, what do you mean you didn't like it? She said, I felt out of control. I felt out of control. Not my experience. As I drink, I get control. As I drink, the view on the screen gets more and more HD. As I drink, things look okay. And that is really what makes me alcoholic.
And those people that aren't doing things the way we want them to be doing, it doesn't matter. It's just okay.
You're okay?
I drank at the end of my drinking, I drank at the world. What is the matter with all these people? Go home, 11 o'clock at night. Drink it away.
Live and let live. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Things were just okay.
Yeah. That's the thing that really is the crux here, is it what it does for me. It changes my perception of everything going on around me. It instantly changes everything. And the problem with that is if you're like me and you have discovered that at a young age, for me it was 13 and a half years old, and you've done it over and over and over and over and over to almost daily, it's really hard to really take that hard wire out of my head, because I automatically reach for the relief. It's my answer. At my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was fortunate enough to hear this woman tell a horrible blow-by-blow story. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh my God. And I looked for all the differences completely. I was nothing like these people. Nothing like them. Later on, I started realizing how much I was like them and how much I was screwed up. And realizing what I really had here, that it just, everything, alcohol became the answer. I heard the problem in my first meetings. It's the problem. All the booze is the problem. I somehow in here knew it was my answer. I knew it was causing problems. But if you're like me, I don't care. You give me 8 minutes of, and I'll risk it all. I remember one time I was on probation. I had a car that didn't have a rear tail light. The tags were bad, and I was on probation, and I've been drinking for 2 days, and it was 1:30 in the morning, and I was out of booze. And I remember thinking about it and getting in the car and driving. Like, if I get pulled over, I am so done. What the heck? Like, if it does for you what it does for me, I'll throw it all in the wind. I don't know. My friend Scott used to say, God rest his soul, if you had never heard Scott Redman on CD, you really want to listen to him. He's a fabulous speaker. But Scott used to talk about that. He'd say, I take a drink and you cease to exist. You become paper mache. You're my kids. You're my wife. I love you more than anything. But when I take it, if you get between me and the drink, you become something less than human. You have to, so I can continue doing what I'm doing, because I'm sick. I have a real, real problem with this. It goes on to say here that after they've succumbed to desire again, as somebody do, the phenomenon craving develops. They go through the whirling stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. And this is repeated over and over and over and over. Who relates to that? I'm not going to do it again. Remember that? Not going to do it again, not going to do it again, not going to do it again. And then I find myself in this spot on page 24. One of the things, there's a lot of stuff to cover. We're not going to have a lot of time if we want to get to inventory in a while. But on 24, top of the page, describes me pretty well. Because I know I have, you know, years ago, I remember I was riding down La Espina Boulevard on a Ninja motorcycle one morning, and I had a couple of bad days, and I wasn't drinking that day, and it was a nice spring day, you know, and cool outside, and I was zipping down the road on that bike, and I was feeling good, the air was blowing through my hair, and I thought to myself, you know, life is good. If I just didn't take that first drink, I knew then, this is years ago, if I just didn't start the cycle off, I'd be all right. I mean, I knew that one's too many, a thousand's never. I knew all of that. The problem was what we're going to talk about today, the real problem. The obsession, the physical craving and the allergy are bad in themselves. But the problem is, if I don't kick off the allergy, I don't have to worry. The problem is I can't stop taking a drink I can't stop taking. That's the problem. Sooner or later, I find it necessary to pick up a drink. So on page 24, let's go to 24, you guys. Who wants to read top of the page at a certain point through the italics?
All right.
Please, thank you.
At a certain point, the drinking of every alcoholic passes into a state the most powerful desire spot for Indians is absolutely no avail. This traffic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it's expected. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drinking. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against it.
Wow. Anybody want to comment on that?
Because that's the only life we knew. That's the only life I knew.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it was like, you know, so what? You know, humiliation, so what?
We discredited everything that we've done that was hurt people. Or, yeah. I mean, it wasn't that bad.
Moms, it's like childless. You know, we have that first kid. We're never doing that again in 6 months. And we're like, oh, that'll be great. So you just spend how horrible it can be. Mm-hmm. Pain for others and for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I also try to manage it. You know, I'm only going to have one or two. Not realizing, not knowing at that point that I've set off the allergy. You know, it was never one or two.
Anybody else?
The idea about the choice.
Boom! Thank you.
Yes, you know that's one of the main delusions that you hear perpetuated around the rooms is that people have a choice in whether they drink or not. If I was choosing to get up and do the things that I did to me and my family and the people that I cared about the most, that would imply that I'm a complete sociopath.
Hey, now it's not get personal.
I wake up and say, hey, I'm going to break the hearts and minds of everybody that I care about the most. Trust and believe me, I wasn't setting out to do that. It's not that I wouldn't stop, it's that I absolutely couldn't stop. You know, a choice is two or more reasonable options.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Is it reasonable for me to get up and do that on a daily basis?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea that you have choice implies that you have power.
Mm.
The next line that you read after that, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reason yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and mm-hmm. drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. Where does my choice spring from? My choice springs from my willpower. The idea that you have a choice, maybe if you're not alcoholic, you have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
But this could be a death sentence to tell a real alcoholic. That
absolutely.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And guess what? As long as I think I have a choice up here in my mind, why go to God?
Right?
See, I was in a situation that I couldn't walk away from on my own. And I had to get that. On page 30, it talks about fully conceding to your
yep.
innermost self.
Step one.
Now, innermost self isn't up here in my mind. My mind is what brought me into alcoholism. Why would I go into that for a solution? You know? I had to fully concede deep down in here that I can't control stopping once I start. And once I've been stopped, I can't keep my way in and not starting.
Yeah.
I had to really get that. And until that happened, you know, and there's no consequences. It says at certain times. The word certain means definite, inescapable. I won't be able to get my way out of it. And there is no defense.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
Right? And that's what that last sentence ended up with. But I think that's something that you really have to get before you can even go to step two. What does insanity look like?
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's it. That's well put. Well put. Because, and that's a pet, it's something I hear a lot in meetings. I choose not to drink today. Well, if you choose not to drink today, pal, maybe you'll choose to drink at the Dodger game, then not drink after the game, and then wait till the Lakers play. You know, I mean, I've lost the power of choice. I've lost the power. And then they'll say stuff like, I love when they go, just think the drink through. Just drink. Yeah, that's, well, I mean, if that helps me to actually call my sponsor, go to a meeting, take some direction, terrific. But if I'm just going to rely on thinking it through, I'm in a lot of trouble. I'll tell you a quick story. I go to a treatment center and pick up these guys, and I take it there. It's a really cool place. Let me take guys to meetings. So I go up there, I grab these guys, and we get in the car. So one night, I go pull this guy, and I talk to the guy, and I'm saying, you always see how they're doing. He says, yeah, I was here before. I met you before. And I go, you did? He goes, yeah, I was here like 9 months ago. I go, really? So what happened? He goes, well, I got out of here, and I didn't drink for, you know, the first several months. I go, were you going to meetings and call a sponsor? He said, no. Because I made it almost 6 months before it got bad again. You know, I started drinking. And I go, well, what were you doing to not drink for 6 months if you're an alcoholic? He said, well, it's really easy. The last run I was on, my wife took the VHS machine, and she video recorded me. And I was in such a... It was so disgusting that every time I thought about drinking, I'd put that tape in. And I'd watch it, and then I wouldn't drink. I wouldn't want to drink. And I go, well, then how'd you get back here? He said, oh, that night, I didn't want to watch an effing film. Swear to God. So there it is. It's like I've lost the power of choice, which really translates. This is what got me, because I came to meetings and never heard this. And I heard an English guy named Mickey. And Mickey said powerlessness was, it made me do what I already don't want to do, including it. Sober. Sober without a drink, it convinces me and makes me do it again. And I went, what I translated that was this: I can't even trust me anymore. I can't trust me anymore. Because this is how this goes down. I love that what you talked about here, that the most powerful desire to stop is unavailable. Our so-called willpower becomes cracking non-existence. We're unable at certain times to bring into consciousness with sufficient force the memory and suffering and humiliation a week and month ago. So here it is. Here it is. I come off a bad run. I put my hands on her again. I hate myself for what I've done. I've spent all the money. I've done horrible things. I can't stand myself. And Gary shows up the next day and says, hey, man, I got a case of Michelob and some other stuff. Let's go. And I'll go, dude, get away from here. You can call someone else up. I ain't touching that crap. And maybe I don't. Maybe I go back in the house, barbecue, eat something, watch some TV, relax, and get some rest. And maybe I pull that off for a few days. Because the pain of what I did is, I can feel it so bad in my gut. That it's distasteful. I'm sick. But as the days go by, I remember how bad it was. I remember what I did. But as the days go by little, I don't feel it like I did. At the same time, I have life going on. At first, the scale's like really heavy. We're not drinking. But as I start to forget more and more, things are happening. Bills are coming in. Work stressful, whatever it is, bam, the scale gets tipped over and over and over again. On top of the page of page 25, he mentions this line, but for the grace of God, there have been so many other convincing demonstrations. And here's the definition that I love of the word hopeless. This is just, it's not a definition out of the Wikipedia or Webster's, but this is something I like a lot. So many want to stop and cannot. That's hopeless. I had a hard time with the word hopeless because you guys would talk about this hopelessness. And I always envisioned, you know, some guy in front of 7-Eleven, he smelled like piss and he didn't work and he was dumb. And I fancied myself a bright guy. I don't know why, but I did. And I don't identify with that. I'll go out and work. I'll do what I got to do. I'll take care of business. But I didn't get that hopeless meant I want to stop and I can't. It's that simple. I don't care whether you're living up in Beverly Hills or you're living on a park bench. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The outside circumstances mean nothing. The bottom is the same for all of us. What? What about a high bottom drunk? Bottom is the same for all of us. There are no high or low bottom drunks. Somebody who has a lot of money, whatever, the bottom is the same for all of us. The bottom is, I want help and I'll do whatever I got to do to get it. I've watched guys who come out of the gutter with nothing, with the clothes on their back. And I've watched people who sold their company for $50 million, and they're at the bottom. They're at the bottom. I watched a man sit there and tell me, I said, what was it that brought you here? He said, I was sitting in my office in my $4 million home, my Maserati in the driveway, all the money he's got. I was sitting in my office one more time at 3 in the morning, and I was doing it again. I have a law degree. I run a company, and I couldn't take it. I couldn't take that this had defeated me, that this controlled my life. I wanted to kill myself, and I became willing to do anything to stop it. That's the bottom. I asked for help, and I take the help and I do what's suggested. And I don't have to go any deeper than I've already went. I don't have to go any deeper than I've already went with this. I love, that's from Mickey too. That's a Mickey line. Because I hear, well, his bottom, her bottom. Nah, bottoms are all the same. All the same. Let's go to page 30 of the book because you brought up a very interesting thing here. Let's talk about this. I love this. Who wants to read that? Most of us. You hear this read in meetings a lot? Let's read it real quick.
Most of us have been unwilling to admit we're a real alcoholic. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking career has been characterized by countless bans and proof we can drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smart.
Boom. Questions? Anybody? Comments?
Yeah. I mean, that last time that people spread the delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. Has to be. When people say there's no must in this book, FYI, has to is two words per month. You know, it has to be smashed. If I think that I'm like other people, or I, not only that I can't drink like other people, but that I can't stay sober like other people, I need a spiritual process in order to keep me sober.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because a lot of us, I used to think that my problem ended at the end of the month. I don't get better once I get sober. I start to get worse. I start to come unraveled at the seams with restless irritability and discontent. So I can't, not only can I drink like other people, but I can't stay sober like other people. And I need to be moved out of the delusion and into the truth. This is a program that demands rigorous honesty. Delusion is the worst form of this.
What's a delusion?
It's the lie that I lie.
Yeah. Some of it's not real. I think it's psychotic wishful thinking. It really is. Yeah. I've always read this and thought they could drink like other people. I never wanted to drink like other people. I've never in my life wanted to drink. Who wants to drink like other people? You watch them drink? Really? Seriously? You want to have one or two and go, that's enough? I'm feeling it? I'm starting to feel it? Really? It's like starting sex and going, no, I'm starting to feel it. I don't want to do that. Come on. With me, it's not like other people. I want to do it and keep the damage down. That's what I want. I want to drink with just as much as I want and not lose jobs, not fight with people, not lose my marriage, not lose money. That's what I really want to do. That's what I come here looking for. And this is telling me, to get rid of the delusion. Here it is. This is the first step in recovery, fully conceding to my innermost self. And if you're around a while and you bump into a crusty old timer, they might walk up to you and say, son, what's the first step in recovery? You'll go, powerless over alcohol, my last. No, that's wrong. First step in recovery. And it's confusing. This is the first before the formation of the 12. And it's a little bit different, I think, than the step in page 58. Admitting is easy for me. I'll admit to anything under the right set of circumstances. If you put me in front of a judge and tell me you're going to give me 9 months in jail, or if I'm an alcoholic, I can go to treatment, I turn into an alcoholic real quick. Fully conceding is when I'm by myself all alone and there's no one else to con, manipulate, scam, run game on. When I'm by myself in here, I know that I'm screwed. I know I am screwed. My old sponsor used to say, if you're new and you feel like you're dying, it's because you are. It's because you are. But we have a solution before you leave and hang yourself, because it gets pretty, yeah, it gets a little bit hard to deal with. Let's look at real quickly. I want to go into a little bit. There's some stories in here which are really phenomenal. The principles in the stories, I like them because they bring out some stuff. The first one is the guy of 30, and the principle behind that one is the idea that after a period of time, alcohol won't affect me the way it used to. That's the first lie that I tell myself. I've watched this play out over and over and over through the years, and I've had these thoughts myself. over and over and over. I've had the thought, well, you know, I was younger with a lot of problems. And because, you know, let's be real. My mind races and does stuff. And if I can't recall with sufficient force the suffering and humiliation of a week or a month ago, how do you expect me to do that at 3 years or 5 years or 12 years or 15 years? How do you expect me to do that? And the answer is be around new people. The answer is stay green. The answer is look into someone's eye and hear the story and relate and go, oh my God. The answer is listening to them and hearing something in myself that I can't hear and learning and being able to love something in me that I can't touch or love. Over and over again. That is the answer for a guy like me. Then we have the story with Jim. I love Jim's story. I think we have to take a break, though. I think we're right at that time. 10-minute break? Let's do that.
Okay, so we are recording today's workshop, and we'll be putting the recording on CDs, man, that should work out for sure. You can buy a copy of today's workshop after the speaker meeting this afternoon. After the prayer, we will take a 10-minute break. Please rejoin us for the next session promptly in 10 minutes. Will somebody lead us in the